I think that's a fitting start to introducing my guest to you this morning. She is an established actress and singer, and she opened up Mamma Mia on the stage in this country when it first came. And she's been in Guys and Dolls and British TV and all sorts. And she knows a bit about Eurovision as well. Good morning to my guest, Lisa Stocker.
Good morning. Very good pronunciation there.
I've been practicing with the help of my friends. So lovely to have you with us here in the studio. Now, you were just telling us a little bit about that song, The Winner Takes It All. A lot of people think it's a positive song, but it's so not, is it?
Right. I think it's just really misunderstood because of the title. So it's like, yay, The Winner Takes It All. But actually, it's a really sad and poignant song about the breakup of a relationship. So, in fact, recently I was asked to sing it at this sort of award ceremony when they were handing out prizes. I said, I really don't think that's appropriate. And I then had to go ahead and explain it. And he was like, oh, no, we definitely can't have that song. So, yeah, it's a really beautiful song, but you really have to pick your moments when you sing it. Like, it's not a wedding song.
Don't
do it at weddings.
Absolutely not. So, putting the song aside then, Lisa, I didn't even know that Paul McCartney, for example, founded a school for the performing arts. So how does a girl from Northern Norway know that?
Well, actually, I think we can both agree that things happen at the right time. And I was a young woman in Norway. I was 20 years old and I had missed all my applications to apply to all the London theatre schools. So I was originally going to apply to RADA and Guildford and all of those. And for some reason, it had just missed me. And all of a sudden, this huge newspaper article happened in Norway where Paul McCartney was all over the front page that he was opening up a performing arts school in Liverpool. And of course, I applied. And I even have a picture of my day of application, which is really funny. And I just thought this was exactly what was supposed to happen. And I remember after my audition, I was in Oslo and I swung myself around a lamppost like you would if you like musical theatre. And I thought, okay, if I don't get in, then it's not meant to be, because I felt like I had done my very best at that audition. And of course, I got in and we were the first graduates ever from that school. So it was rather special.
And you actually met Paul McCartney.
That's right. Yeah. So because I wanted the acting course, we didn't have lessons with Paul McCartney like some of the musicians did, but we did get to meet him. And when I received my golden pin at my graduation, I just had to take my chance and I gave him a kiss on the cheek. So
did
I can
you?
Say I've kissed a Beatle.
That was very cheeky of you.
Very cheeky. And yeah. I think a lot of people have done it since. So he probably looks less shocked now than he did then.
You were a bit of a trendsetter then. Did you always know that you wanted to go down that path of musical theatre?
Well, I think I did. I mean, when I was very little, I wanted to be a midwife, actually. And I've always been very into health as well. But I think it was just, I've always loved performing. It was my passion. We had these mirrored wardrobes, actually, in my house, which were a godsend when you're into musical theatre, because I spent a lot of hours practicing my dance. I played the piano. I joined a choir. And I was the youngest person in my hometown to be given private lessons at the music conservatory. They'd never had anyone that young before. So they just made an exception for me to study with a young opera singer student.
And how old were you at that point then?
I was 14.
Wow. So you already were on quite a strong path to where you wanted to go at that stage.
Yeah, I think I was just really passionate about it. And you know, I come from a small town. It's a lot bigger now. But when I was a kid, there were 70,000 people. It's now a massive, booming university town with a massive hospital and loads of studying opportunities. Also, the sort of the fishing industry has a massive international section there. But when I was young, there weren't that many opportunities. I went to a dance school and we did big shows and all of that. And then I joined a music, it's sixth form. I was 16 until mm-hmm. I was 18. So it was 3-year studies. But I didn't really do acting until I went to university mm-hmm. properly. And the reason I wanted to do that and not do music was that I felt that if I went down the acting route, it would just give me a broader opportunities, I suppose, because I could do acting, I could do music, whereas if I went down the music route, I could really only do the one thing. So that was one of my decisions. And also because I've always been attracted to the singers who are expressive, like Shirley Bassey, like Barbara Streisand, like Liza Minnelli, like all of these incredible
the
women.
The big divas then, really.
I love the big divas. And it's so funny because I'm such a tiny little person. And I keep getting the feedback, like, how does a little person have such a big voice? You know, and Edith Piaf even, you know, she was called Little Bird, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Or Little Sparrow. I was told by my piano teacher, actually, when I was just 12 and hadn't yet started to develop, he laughed at me when I said I wanted to be an opera singer because he said, you don't even have any breasts yet. And I thought, oh, my God, what does that have to do with anything? So I've never kind of let anything hold me back like that. And I just was really passionate about learning the craft of expression, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you land the part of... Well, you were played Sophie, didn't you?
That's
in
right.
Mamma Mia. So how do you land the part of the opening cast for Mamma Mia in London? How did that happen?
Well, I think, like I mentioned before, I think so much is just about timing, actually. And I was very fortunate at the end of my graduation, we had a showcase in London where I got an agent who was really good. And I just started auditioning straight afterwards. And in fact... The thing that led to my Mamma Mia audition was actually a really terrible audition of mine for Starlight Express. So I had an audition for the musical Starlight Express. If anyone doesn't know the whole show happens on roller skates. It's an amazing show. I hope it comes back to London because it's brilliant. And it was the first musical I ever saw. So I actually thought this is meant to be because it felt like, you know, I've been watching this show since I was a little girl. And my singing went brilliantly. I did that very well. But when it came to the dancing, I did a terrible dancing audition. And in fact, the choreographer had to turn her head to laugh because I was so bad. But luckily in Mamma Mia, we do have dancing, but it's not extremely difficult. And so because of my singing, I suppose, and because they liked me, the casting director, David Grinrod, decided to see me for Mamma Mia, which was... you know, brand new show. Nobody had heard of it. And me being really naive and coming from the north of Norway and not really understanding the industry, I didn't really understand how big it is to audition for an original show. Now I do, but then I really didn't, which in a way is just as well, because I guess I didn't feel the pressure. And I had to have 8 auditions.
8?
8 rounds, yeah. And I auditioned with different people, with different actors. And in fact... one of those actors was Andrew Langtree, who I studied with at Lippa, and he was one of my best friends. And we actually lived together at the time, which was so funny. And he ended up playing Sky.
Wow.
And on my final audition, I auditioned with this other actor who, gosh, I hope he's not listening, but he really didn't do a very good job. this guy, I don't know his name. And I thought, oh, my God, it's going to mess up my chances. I'm not going to make it now. But I did my best and just, you know, auditioned past it. And I remember the director, Phyllis Deloitte, came up to me after my audition and she winked at me and she said, I'll see you soon. And I thought, oh, my God, what does this mean? Yeah. And then I got the role.
Did you think that it helped that you were Scandinavian as well? Did that have any influence on it?
Benny and Bjorn have been asked this in interviews before and they both say that they swear that they didn't know I was Scandinavian until really... towards the end.
Wow.
And what they didn't remember was that I auditioned for them a couple of years before in Sweden for Christina from Duvemåla, the musical. And then too, I had really lovely feedback from them. So I think it was just a lot of coincidences. I think I was a very young 21-year-old. Actually, I was 23 actually when I auditioned. I think I was a very young 23-year-old, very naive, very blue-eyed. And I think that was just my natural persona, my personality. Yeah. I hadn't really had anything really bad happen to me in my life, luckily. And I think it just coloured, you know, how I was in the audition.
Right.
And that's what they've said, you know, afterwards when they cast me, they said I was like Bambi on ice. I was just this clumsy, you know, kind of really naive person.
But with a really positive energy.
Yeah.
And which I is guess... what I found when I met you.
Oh,
which
thank
is really,
you.
Yeah, it's very positive. You come across very positive.
Oh, well, that's yeah. a really nice compliment.
Yeah, well,
thank you.
Yeah, I know.
But I think well, that was
I'll give
why,
you the money
yeah.
later. You can give me the money later.
I'll pay you so, later yeah, for yeah, having
yeah,
me
exactly.
on.
So you stayed for over a year and did like 400 performances. Am I right
that's
there?
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at what point do you say, I mean, was there a contract or did you say, right, enough? I've sung ABBA enough now and I'm
well,
going to go.
Actually, I was offered a second year mm-hmm. and it was really difficult to say no to that because I loved the show. And I mean, I'll never experience anything like it. I know I won't because it was so incredible and we had standing ovations every night. You know, we used to worry that people would fall off the balcony because they were so excited seeing the show. And we had a phenomenal cast, lovely, lovely people. So it was a difficult decision to actually turn my back on that. But I think the reason, and I'm glad I did, because I really believe as a performer, especially when you're a young performer, that you need to get in as many experiences as you can. Because it's all about learning, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I think when you've done a show that many times, there's only so much you can learn staying in the same part.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I think that's one of the toughest thing with doing a show is trying to keep it fresh. And I definitely always take a lot of pride in seeing each show as a new show because there's new people coming in. They've just paid a lot of money to come and see a show. And I feel very strongly as a performer, it's my duty to give them the best show I can possibly do.
Fantastic.
And
I'm sure you do.
Year,
yeah. After
you
year.
You know, you just, there's so many ways you can say a line and sing a song. And I just felt it was time.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I'm going to give us a break from talking. I'm going to play a track that's off of your album, A Piece of Lisa, which came out in 2006, which is an album of show tunes, isn't
right.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you do marvellously. And we'll talk a bit about this track afterwards, but it's one of my personal favourites. I do like a bit of cabaret. But I really want to talk to you about your accent in this, but we're going to listen to it first. Absolutely brilliant. Where do you get the clip tones from?
Oh gosh, I think I'm just a good imitator. I had a really good conductor on this album, Nick Davies. He used to conduct in the West End. He did Mary Poppins and lots of other shows, and he was just fantastic because we recorded this with the Norwegian Broadcasting Orchestra. They're like the BBC orchestra, and they're phenomenal. And he was just really good about giving me some thoughts about what he would love to hear, because he had confidence in me that I could do this accent, because I'm more used to hearing Liza Minnelli kind of version do this.
Yeah.
But he thought, no, we're going to go back to strip it down to the original, because it was originally Dame Judi Dench who did it in the West End.
Had no idea about that.
I didn't either, but my mother-in-law actually told me that because she saw the original production. She actually has the original LP
of
Judi Dench.
You think of cabaret and you just think, of course, Liza Minnelli. That's all you think. You think of the American version of it.
Exactly. But it's supposed to be a British girl, a British young girl playing that role. And I think it was really fun to do it in this way. And so I just went for it and had... kind of, I guess, I had Julie Andrews in my ear.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds a little bit like that. Incredible. So you went, I want to ask you a bit more about your days when you were in the performing arts school
sure.
in Liverpool. Was it like the kids from Fame, for example? Was it leg warmers and all of that? Were you sort of hanging out and with each other and sort of like, just leg warmery sort of stuff and breaking into song every now and then in your breaks.
I mean, I think that we said that we weren't, but actually I think we were a bit like Fame because first of all, we were really fortunate because we were the first students. We were the only intake. So my year ran the entire school for the first year. And then, of course, it was just 2 years and then it was 3 years. So until our third year, we weren't a complete school. And so the first year or two, it was really an extraordinary experience. And we did put on our own shows. We did things in the bar, in the, you know, canteen. And it was a bit like, you know, we'd sit and have lunch and someone would start drumming. And then suddenly there'd be a jam. And so it was definitely a bit like that. And we were very much encouraged to do our own thing. And I think that's really unique. And I think it's very important because I do think doing your own thing in uni is essential to what you're going to be doing later. And in fact, my son at the moment goes to the Brit School, which is really similar. So he's year 10 now in the Brit School in film and media production. And that was actually started by my principal at my university, which is such a strange circle, isn't it?
Oh, wow. So and, your family's involved now.
Yeah, it's all mental. And in fact, he got his acceptance letter on my anniversary date for Mamma Mia. And I just thought, this is so bizarre. It was like three circles all coming together. But anyway, my point is, even there, at that age, he's only 15, they're already a bit like the FAME school. So they're already getting that experience. And I think all schools should be a little bit more like this, because I really find creativity is so undervalued. And you need creativity in all subjects, even science and maths and engineering and English. Yes. And all of these different subjects also need creativity. And I love how schools like LEPA, schools like the Brit School encourage this freedom. I think it's going to drive our world forward, and it's really positive.
Right. I think it's quite enriching as well. Creativity enriches our lives and,
everybody,
and stuff. Yeah.
Everybody.
And it doesn't need to be on a grand scale. It can be can be just small little bits.
It can be really simple.
You know, creativity.
Absolutely. And every single person can find creativity in some way. It doesn't have to be in a particular subject. It doesn't have to be a particular thing. It doesn't have to be big, like you say.
As you say, it, you know, it could be flower arranging or
Absolutely.
Whatever.
Absolutely.
Even putting together a hospital radio
show. A radio show
is
super creative.
How creative is that? So let's go back to ABBA.
Okay.
You know the guys from ABBA. You know Benny and Bjorn, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
And what is it? I mean, for most people, they are the physical manifestation of, like, bliss. You talk to most people just like, oh, ABBA. If they could come back together and be together, you know. And
were they on, aren't they?
Yeah, but in a sort of, like, recorded form,
right,
hologram-y
in a virtual
type
way. Right.
With a couple of new songs I hear as well, which is great. But what's it like, sort of knowing such legends?
Well, I have to, I don't feel like I know them. You know, I don't, when I think of knowing someone, I feel like I know their innermost thoughts, and I don't do that, but I do, I have worked with them and they are lovely people. And of course, when I meet them, I get to say hello and give them a hug, which is really nice. But when we were working on the show, Bjorn particularly was involved a lot. Benny is more involved now than he was then, but at the time it was very much Bjorn's baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be on all the rehearsals and very much involved in the show. And I remember asking him one time when I got to ride in the car with him, what is it like? Do you understand how big you are? Like, do you understand how important ABBA is to people? And he said, no, because if I start to think about that, I think I'll go mad. So they don't kind of acknowledge their own success, which I think is what keeps them so humble.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see Benny as well, Benny's biggest passion is playing his accordion and playing with his folk band and his Swedish folk music.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And it's so sweet when you see him, and he's just so laid back. And in fact, when I was playing chess in Tromsø, my hometown, we actually performed the musical Chess at the Chess World Championships in my hometown with all the chess players, and Kasparov was in the audience. I mean, it was just extraordinary. And my conductor, Anders Elias, who was the original conductor for chess, just called Benny up and said, hey, Benny, I just need to check something, you know. And we're all standing there going, oh, my gosh, he's talking to Benny. So, I mean, even though I've worked with them, I'm so in awe of these people. But I always want to bring up the ladies because I feel, even though Benny and Bjorn, they definitely wrote the music and the lyrics, but ABBA would not be ABBA without the input and the creativity of Frida and Agnetha. I think that's really important to acknowledge because Absolutely. Their sound is all about those two women.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
their relationship and all of the, you know, positive tensions and all of those things that were happening during their shows and in the recording, it's all there. And we just wouldn't have that group. And Benny and Björn wouldn't have the career they have now if it wasn't for those two women.
You're so,
so I really
right.
want to point that out.
Yeah, definitely. And it's well worth talking about. That brings me quite nicely onto another subject here. And this is probably the last subject we can go into because otherwise we'll be here for hours. Because you've done so much, haven't you? I mean, oh God, it's not just about the sort of Mamma Mia and the Paul McCartney Performing Arts School, but you've been in Guys and Dolls and you've been on the television. And I mean, incredible.
Thank
your career so far. But no interview is ever going to be complete with a Norwegian singer without talking about the Eurovision Song Contest, because of which you tried out for at one point, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that.
Okay, so when was it? I can't even remember. It was a few years ago. I can't remember the year. But I got the opportunity to be in the tryouts for the Norwegian Eurovision. Mm-hmm. So each country, of course, have to have different competitions in order to find their representative. Although the UK, I think, did this for the first time last year, didn't they? Where they televised their finals or something, didn't they?
They've done it before, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they do it in the same way. See, the Scandinavians are really clever about how they build this up, how they build up Eurovision.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the UK are really missing a trick.
That's interesting, yeah.
Because in Norway, I worked with a couple of songwriters and we worked out this song together called... oh my God, what's it called? Remind me. With Love, it's called.
Yeah.
Really beautiful song. I think the style is perhaps a bit outdated, which is maybe why we didn't succeed. But it was an interesting process to be a part of. And it's huge. I mean, we have thousands of live audience and half of Norway is watching on telly. So it's a massive show, huge production. And I had, you know, custom-made costumes. We had pyrotechnics. I had glitter. It was just mad. And it's a really unique experience. But I think in order to do that, I think you have to be so passionate about winning the Eurovision. And I guess I'm not sure my heart was in it completely, to be honest with you. I wanted to do it, to try what it was like. But it did feel like there's a lot of things that are out of your control. For instance, I do think that the producers of the shows kind of have their favorites. And I think they push that very much for the press.
Right.
And so I do feel if you're not one of those people and you're an underdog, it's very hard to get through that sort of system.
Yeah.
And I guess that was where I was at. So I unfortunately didn't succeed to get through to the Norwegian finals. But it was an amazing experience. It was a lot of fun. And
as you say, you guys take it, and Sweden especially, take it so
Absolutely.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Which is why, of course, there's so many winners that come from Sweden. But this year, to my eyes at least, we got everything right. A beautiful girl.
Yeah.
A beautiful song.
Yeah.
Very cool, bit cutting edge. Suri, she did a wonderful job.
Brilliant.
And still, two or three from the bottom.
Well, you have to remember that the Eurovision is a political show. It's a political show disguised in music.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Scandinavia are lucky, because Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Iceland, Finland, we all kind of support each other, even though we're competitors.
Yes.
And the UK, unfortunately, with well, you know, the big B word, everything that's going on with the UK at the moment.
We have Malta that votes for us 12 points all the time.
But we're not. We're just not popular. We're the world's laughing stock at the moment. So yeah. I don't think we're going to win Eurovision for a while.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because we don't. We're an island with not many people voting for us.
Yeah.
So until we become popular as a nation and everyone's best friend, I don't think we'll win Eurovision unless there's a miracle and there's like a song that blows everyone out of the water where everyone forgets about
absolutely
all of that.
Yes, yes. And that would probably come from something that is a little bit risque, as in, you know, Israel's sort of diva, la diva.
Yeah, I just think...
If you blast them or, yeah. you know... Conchita Wurst, the man with the beard or the yeah. woman with the beard. If you can be brave enough to put something into the mix that is so wild.
I agree, but I think the UK have so many unique artists. We have, mm-hmm. you know, what England has going for it is eccentricity, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I think we are so scared of playing that. Mm. But I think going down that route where you're just a little bit original and you dare... Because you've got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
You're not going to win anyway unless you do something extraordinary.
You might as well do something extraordinary, yes. Right, so we've done Eurovision. We have to move on because we're going to be here for ages. Here's your home now. Mm-hmm. Tell us what's... I know you're a mum of two and that's your focus now, I suspect. But anything in the pipeline that you want to share with us?
Well, I will be... I'm the voice of Elsa in Norway. So for the Frozen universe, everyone who loves Disney Frozen. So I'm Norwegian Elsa in Norway. So when that comes out, I will be Elsa again. And we will be going into the studio hopefully next year to record that. And I will be on TV in the UK shortly, but I can't even say what it is because I'm not allowed.
That's amazing.
So in about 5 weeks' time, I will be on TV globally in an episode of a very popular show, which I'm really excited about, but I can't tell you what it is.
Great. Well, you need to keep us informed so that I can tell our listeners later.
I will.
It has been... I could talk to you all day, but it has been amazing having you in the studio. Thank you so much for coming in. And I want to finish with a track that you sang on the original Mamma Mia musical mm-hmm. soundtrack, which came out in 1999, and of course it's got to be Thank You for the Music. Did you like singing this?
Oh, this is one of my favorite numbers, and it still is. I used to sing this as a small child, you know, when this album came out, in my birth year, I believe. Maybe it was 78, so I was like 3 years old. And I just loved this album and the song, and I used to sing it when I was a little kid. So fantastic. Thank you so much, Mandy, for having me on.
It's been a blast,
and I hope everyone heals well in the hospital and around the world, and that you're all
thank you
doing good.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's finish with this song. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. The songs I